after such lovely chanting, supposed to be able to do something after that. Let us go within and feel the greatness of God's presence. It is as if opening to a new life when you feel that divine presence inside of you. Before, you were totally human. And when you connect with that divine presence, you are becoming divine. It doesn't happen in an instant for most. It's a gradual transition. But over time, you feel that divine presence more and more. It becomes more attractive to you than all the things of this world. And so as a result of that, you go through an inner transformation. You feel the cells of your body begin to tingle with vitality. You feel it in your brain and all the cells of your brain. You feel the divine energy flowing through your spine. It is something that begins to take you over. And you feel yourself to be transformed, as it were. It is the great transformation from going from the human to the divine. And it is in the capacity of every single human being living on earth. Few take advantage of it. Few know of it. Few are able to fully manifest it. But it lies there in potential, like a seed, perhaps in the winter ground. Then as you practice your sadhana, it turns into springtime. And your spiritual practice begins to germinate that seed. And your constant practice begins to shoot out roots. Roots that will reach up into the blue sky. There are no guarantees that just because you have practiced for a certain amount of time that you will achieve anything. It's something that is earned. It is a matter of grace beginning to germinate within you. But feel in whatever state of consciousness you come, feel that that seed, that Christ seed, that Krishna seed, that divine seed is residing in you now. That its capacity is beyond your imagination or your mind. And that you can set out on the great journey, the great exploration. But with that in mind, let us pray. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king. Journal out. I've already received some feedback that it's the best ever, so be sure to pick up your copies on the way out. To read from posting this morning entitled Guiding Intelligence. It's my title, you'd think I get it right. Occasionally I hear the arguments from atheists, there is no proof of God. and yet, at a glance around us, demonstrates an intelligence so monumental as to convince any open skeptic. The idea that the universe, the Earth, and the biosphere of the Earth could all happen by random mutations and chance, even allowing for billions of years of evolution, really cannot explain the complexity of design that goes into a flower, an animal, or a human being. The human body is demonstration enough. In the human body are 100 trillion cells. Imagine that, 100 trillion cells. And 10 times that many microorganisms, or good bacteria, operating in the gut, that some call the forgotten organ, are all working in an efficient manner that keeps the heart pumping, a series of organs that are performing uncountable functions all the time. Could human intelligence design such a body? While we are busy mapping the body and describing many of its functions, we are light years, if ever, from being able to make one from scratch. And yet that is what this universe is. The atomic and subatomic functions going on around us all the time. The stellar systems. Look in any direction and you see miraculous life self-creating, refining, and improving. It is quite a lot to take in. And yet, in its colossal nature, this physical creation is but God's footstool. For all the magnificence of this creation we see all around us, it is merely a reflected intelligence or manifested intelligence. When you look at a building, you see the expressed intelligence of the architect, not the intelligence itself of the man or woman who designed the building. If we want to know that intelligence itself, it would help to have a conversation with the architect, and you will see the nature of his or her thoughts, what went into the design and the construction. There's so much to learn. Add another layer to that of having a conversation. If in your time with the architect, you could actually experience his mind at work, glimpse into his inner intelligence, the creative intelligence that has gone into bringing forth life, all of life, imagine being able to glimpse that mind. Albert Einstein, the great physicist, famously said, "I want to know God's thoughts. The rest are mere details." What a wonderful concept. And this is what mystics and yogis have claimed, that instilling the human mind, you can be illumined with the way of knowing things even as God does. This is quite a statement. Yet, what if you saw this world as God sees it? When Jesus picked up a simple lily flower and said, "Consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, they spin not, and yet I say unto you that Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed like one of these." What was he seeing in that lily? What was he seeing? Was he seeing it as God sees it? I think yes. I have seen this world transform into a living expression of divinity. I think yes, this is how God sees creation, perfect, blissful, an expression of purity. And when we look out and fail to see the world that way, perhaps it is because we do not see this world as God sees it. Perhaps we insist on our own interpretation of what we see. And perhaps we are only insisting on our own ignorance, our own limited vision of what truly is. Indeed, as Jesus said in the Gospel of St. Thomas, "The kingdom of heaven is spread out upon this earth, but men do not see it." It is time to know the mind of God, to awaken to an entirely new way of seeing this world. And reading from the Bhagavad Gita and Master's interpretation, this comes from chapter 11. Arjuna said, "Thou hast compassionately revealed to me the secret wisdom of the true self, thus banishing my delusion. O Krishna, thou hast told me extensively of the beginning and end of all things and of thy eternal sovereignty. O Great One, truly hast thou thus declared thyself. Yet, O Purushottama, I long to see thee in divine embodiment, thy Ishvara form. O Master, O Lord of Yogis, if thou deemest me able to see it, show me thy infinite self. So he's asking for that universal vision. And the Blessed Lord said, behold, O Arjuna, by hundreds and by thousands, my divine forms, multicolored, omnifarious, beyond the Adiyatas and the Vasus, the Rudras and the twin Ashvins, the Maruts and the many wonders hitherto unknown, here and now, O conqueror of sleep, Arjuna, behold as unified in my cosmic body all worlds that moves or is motionless, and whatever else thou desirest to see. But thou canst not see me with mortal eyes. Therefore I give thee sight divine. Behold my supreme power of yoga. Sanjay said to King Dhritarashtra, with these words, Hari or Krishna, the exalted Lord of Yoga, revealed to Arjuna the consummate embodiment, the cosmic bodied Ishvara form. Arjuna saw the multifarious, marvelous presence of the deity, infinite in forms, shining in every direction of space, omnipotence, all-pervading, adorned with countless celestial robes and garlands and ornaments, upraising heavenly weapons fragrant with every lovely essence, his mouths and his eyes everywhere. If a thousand suns appeared simultaneously in the sky, their light might dimly resemble the splendor of that omnific being. There, resting within the infinite form of the God of Gods, Arjuna beheld the entire universe with all of its diversified manifestations. Then Arjuna, wonderstruck, his hair standing on end, his palms together in prayerful gesture, bowing his head in awe before his Lord, addressed him. And Arjuna said, beloved Lord, adored of gods, behold, thy body holds all fleshly tenets, seers fine, and diverse angel gods divine. Dwelling deep in the mystery cave, the serpent nature's forceful crave, through fierce and subtle, now is tame, forgetful of her deadly game. O sovereign Brahman, god of gods, O lotus seat is snug secured. O great cosmic-bodied Lord of the worlds, O I behold, again I behold, thee all and everywhere, thy countless arms, trunks, mouths, and eyes, yet drooping dark my knowledge lies. About thy birth and reign and ending here, this day, O blazing furious flame, O blinding ray, thy focused power aglow, thy name spreads everywhere to the darkest abysmal lair, gilding with a crown of stars and a wielding mace of sovereign power. Thou whirlest forth, O burning Phoebus, thine evolution-circling discus. Immortal Brahman, all-supreme, thou cosmic shelter, wisdom's theme, eternal Dharma, guardian true, thou diest I not ever knew. O birthless, fleshless, deathless one, I see thy endless working arms, thy ever-watching eyes of suns and moons, the staring skies, and from thy mouth spoons throbbing flame, as utterest thou the Om thy cosmic name. Thy self-born luster shields from harm, all creation, distance flung, doth warm. O sovereign soul, twixt earth and home of gods, directions all in earthly sods, all high abodes and encircling spheres, by thee pervading far and near, the world's triune awestruck by fear, thy dreadful wondrous form adore, in thee the gods their entry make, with folded hands afraid some prey to shelter take, in thee the seers great and the heaven's path successful ones with superb chance of peace, do worship thee and thee alone. The 11 lamps of heaven, the 12 bright suns, the grisly 8, the starry lustres great, aspiring hermits, patrons gods, the agents of the cosmic lords, the twin-born princes strong, of valor known so long, 69 royal breezes force, that binds the atoms close, the long-past guardian spirits of all, the demiglobins, demigods, demons tall, and mighty ones in spirit's path, in wonder gaze upon thy blazon worth. I thee behold, colossal, armed, with starry eyes of countless cheeks, with endless hands and legs, and adorned with lotus feet, thy chasm mouth with doomsday teeth, doth yawn to swallow, swooning, worlds above beneath, and leaves a distilled joyous awe in me, thy grandeur and I, and all are wonderstruck to see. To see the bowels of the void, deep all filled with thee, thy gaping mouth and diverse hues, a fiery lustrous body. O Vishnu of flaming sight, thou quite overpowerest me, my peace doth fright. Ferocious teeth and deadly fires do howl in mouths of thine that at me scowl. Directions four are lost and gone. Compassion show I find no peace alone. O cosmic guardian, Lord of gods, pleased to accept my humble pleading words. The sons of senses swayed in kingly pride, with ego, karmic habit, worldly lure abide, and wait to leap upon our wisdom's chiefs. And yet all do ride the race of death to fall and hide, forever in the devouring mouth, adorned with crushing cruel teeth uncouth, the victor and the vanquished must. Thine offspring doth both the righteous and the ungodly gods, thy love still claim, yet all shall kiss death the dust, and sleep on common floor of earth. Shattered skulls of some are seen, has caught thy greedy teeth between, as diverse restless watery waves of river branches all do crave, to force through crowded wavelets' way, and meet where Neptune's home long lay. Even so heroic streams of life do plunge to meet in mad strife within thy foaming mouth of flaming sea, where sparks of life all dance in thee, as insects lost in beauty's game, all swiftly thoughtless rush to flame. So fog-borne passions fires pretend to glow like heavenly light of thine. Draw on mortals to attend the trumpet call to deathly life. Thy mouth ablaze doth bring to gaze, its leaping tongues to lick the angry blood of strong and weak. Thou Gorman God, thou dost eat with hunger infinite. O Vishnu, thou dost scorch the worlds with all-pervading fiery torch. Be pleased, O first of gods, I ache to know primeval Lord, true who art thou, O fiery mood, yet so benign and good. O tell me to thy royal will, for I will not be still. Blessed Lord then said, in guise of endless doom I come as avarice time, disease and rheum, and burning maw of mind, the weakling's awe, and all the mortal meat of weary worlds of deathly change, and treat them with my nectar life to new and fearless better strife. Even if thou dost forbear the slay, to slay the wicked foes, still they and the warriors all still brave array will sure and certain calmly have to fall in my righteous teeth of law withal. Arise, awake, arise, awake. In this poetic meter, Arjuna is describing what he sees in his divine vision. And at first, his vision goes to the gods and demigods and all of the beauty of God. And he is enthralled with that, in bliss with it. And then he begins to get the dark side of the Lord, the side that destroys, the side that consumes all of this universe, all of creation at some point, and withdraws it back into himself. And it disturbs him. It takes away his peace. Now Krishna is giving this vision to him as a boon of grace because he has requested it. And yet he finds it difficult to be able to stick with it because it's so terrible. It's so awful. When you see this destructive, fierce side of God. And so it is in our spiritual journey. We begin to get glimpses of God. We begin to feel that divine presence inside of us, and we are thrilled with that. But naturally, through the time of our sadhana, we have to face those things that are lying deep inside of us. Those demons, you might say, that are dark, that are painful, that we really don't like to look at. And up they come into our vision. Now in this case, Arjuna was seeing it all as Krishna, and yet he was still disturbed. And it's because he has not yet become completely purified. And in the end, he asked Krishna to resume his most loving form that he's used to as Krishna, because he was not yet ready to fully embrace this universal vision. And so you'll notice that there are times in your deeper meditations when you can feel so uplifted, so attuned to God, so blissful, and then that negativity comes in, that darkness comes in. And even as you affirm in your mind, this too is God, this too is God, still it disturbs you, still it distresses you. And sometimes you just want the familiar around you because it's too terrifying, it's too difficult. Now we don't oftentimes think of God as being in the terrifying aspect. We see it oftentimes in the Old Testament and different messengers of God will often start out with saying, be not afraid. And you think, well, why do they need to be afraid? This is an agent of God, or this is God himself. And yet there is that aspect of being overwhelmed, of being terrorized. Now, if we are not careful, this can dissuade us from continuing on the spiritual path. We feel that it is beyond us. And in a sense, that is true. That is true. It is beyond us. It's not possible as a human being to embrace the totality of all that God is. And so it takes more time to purify the mind, but also we can never purify the mind enough. It is grace that lifts us beyond all things. In the journal, we have a story from Mother, that's actually Mother telling a story from Sri Yukteswar. And this is entitled The Wishing Tree. And it shows the power of the mind. You know, there's a story, Mother starts out, which Sri Yukteswar used to tell many times to his devotees about the wishing tree. There was a spiritual man by name of Hari who had practiced great austerities for a good many years. He had one great desire, and that was to realize his oneness with God. He had the idea that when that happened, the stars would shine, the moon would shine, the sun would shine, his whole being would be filled with light, and everything that he wanted would be given to him. I'm just glad none of us started out the spiritual life like that, thinking that's how it's going to be. But he also, at the same time, had such a material desire because he had heard that there would be such a thing as a wishing tree. This wishing tree was a tree that was brought into existence by spiritual sprites, the little people, for the benefit of those that were seeking God. Anybody who was fortunate enough to find this wishing tree could make a wish, and that wish would be granted. This man, through the long years of practice of austerities, had gained a great deal of power, and part of his power was occult. He determined that he was going to go in quest of his wishing tree because, although he wanted his God realization more than anything else, he also wanted some other desires that he would have liked to have fulfilled. So he went hunting for it one day through the forest, and he came upon it. It was abundantly clothed tree, though he thought how beautiful it was, and he felt a tremendous magnetism. This power within him told him that at last he had come to the vicinity of the wishing tree. He decided to test it out. He thought to himself, if this is truly the wishing tree, I wish that I would have the most beautiful palace in the world materialize instantly. No more had he the thought across his mind than the palace was manifested right before his eyes, complete with huge, spacious lawns, trees, flowers, everything laid out before him. He thought, well, isn't this a wonderful thing? All I have to do now that I'm under the wishing tree is to wish for anything and everything I want. So he thought to himself, it would be very nice that he would have, now that he had a beautiful palace, if he had a lot of beautiful damsels to wait on him. And they would bring me all the finest foods, the most precious garments. They shall serve me day and night and grant my slightest wish. Well, he had no more than wished this than again. The damsels materialized. The food was such it was never thought of, appeared before him, the nectar of the gods. And so he dined and he was waited on. Then he thought to himself, I have all of this worldly wealth of all these precious things and the people to serve me. I must have an army to protect myself. So again, this came into manifestation. A huge army manifested itself in order to take care of him. Well, he was rather tired with all the day's activities, so he decided he would go to rest. So he went to one of the large bedrooms in the lower floor. It was quiet, off by itself, overlooking a forest and a broad, spacious lawn. And as he laid down, he thought to himself, you know, this is a rather secluded part of the palace. There's an open window, and there aren't any soldiers around to guard me. A lion could jump through the window and carry me off, and I couldn't stop him. Nobody is around me to protect me. And no more than he thought of this, then in jumped a huge lion and carried him off, and he was in the end. And that was the end of the man. He had forgot to remember to wish only for that which was good and that which was positive. Each of us, you see, have a wishing tree within us. It is the tree of life. It is controlled and governed by our thoughts and our will. Whatever you think, whatever you wish, whether it be good or so-called evil, we bring into manifestation because the mind is all-powerful. We are all on this path, but for one purpose, and that is to realize our oneness with our Father. It is said that the kingdom of God and the kingdom of heaven are both within. If we find God first, then all of these other things are added unto us. This is true. Whatever clothes we need, whatever food we need, whatever money we need in service is given unto us when we give ourselves completely and absolutely to God. But isn't that an ironical story that Sri Yukteswar told of this wonderful soul in many ways, but he was still of mixed nature. And that mixed nature, in the end, got him in the end, because he began to think on the things that he was afraid of, even though he had all of those beautiful things around him. And this is true for many people in the world. They are successful in a material sense, and they surround themselves with a beautiful home and clothes and cars and all the rest of it. And yet, inside of them is a secret fear and desire, something that is fed day and night and keeps them from feeling peace. And that is why you can have all the things of this world and have no peace, have no real satisfaction, and why you can live in a very, very simple kind of manner and have everything that you ever wanted. Because God is the fulfiller of the desires of the heart. This is true for me and for you and for all people. And for us to really realize it, to go to work on ourselves. Now, we all have desires in this world. And those desires can either come from the deep subconscious mind of those repressed feelings and desires that we have, or they can come from the conscious mind as we enter into this world and we see this thing and that thing and we begin to desire for this and that. Or it can come from God, because God is the original creator. God is the original shopper, because he went out shopping for this universe and everything that's inside of it. He loves to shop. And he loves to purchase, and he loves to create, and he loves to bring in beauty and new things and creativity. You see it all around us. There's a mad rush of creativity in all of nature around us. So it's not surprising, since we are made in his likeness and his image, that we too love to create, that we too love to bring into manifestation things that are not necessarily wrong or bad for us, but we bring in good things. We bring in beauty. We bring in light. Mother was a great one for this. She talked about how when she had no money at all, that she would take a lamp table and it was rather ugly and she would paint it or she would put a nice cloth on it and bring out something new and beautiful in it. That she didn't have any money to her name, but she was always looking to see how she might create beauty around her. I remember when she was in her 80s, and she decided that she was going to update her apartment. And she did it in a very stylish way, and she brought in new curtains. Her son was somebody who installed curtains and sold them, I think. And so he came over and installed them. She had new carpeting. And the place looked brand new. And it was beautiful. And so she always had this vitality coming out of her. Some people, when they get older, they just start to shrink into themselves. But that was not Mother. She wanted to bring out God's beauty, God's light, God's love. And we always have a choice. As long as we are here, as long as we are inhabiting a body, what do we do with ourselves? What do we do with our time? Do we make the most of it? Now, it can be easy to start to draw into yourself, well, I've lived my life, and I'm not sure that there's anything more that I want. And yet God is constantly expressing. Now, it doesn't have to be material things at all. It can be thoughts. It can be poetry. You can reflect on your life and write about it. There can be all kinds of ways that you bring in new inspiration, new light, new life. This world is here for us to create upon. God creates upon it. He created it in the first place. We are co-creators with God. And then we are responsible for our creations. So we have to see that those creations are done in harmony with nature and with God's laws. And in doing so, we find happiness and joy in expressing ourselves, because it is a way to express God within us. You know, if we look out through these eyes, whether we are young, middle, or old, and we see blandness, we see dullness, we see boredom, the problem is with the person, not with the world. I cannot even imagine getting to the end of my to-do list. I have so many things to do, so many things to accomplish. And there are things that are constantly coming new that I would like to be able to accomplish. So God's very nature is expressive intelligence. But the first and foremost thing is for us to go inside and find and contact God first, in order to know what he wants us to do with our lives. You may think to yourself, well, this is my life. Don't I get to choose? And you have that power of choice. But I can tell you with absolute certainty, your life is so much better when you give it over to God. And you let him decide. You ask for his guidance. And you may think to yourself, well, I don't know what God's guidance is for me. Then seek out what your highest light is. What does your highest light tell you? What is it that you aspire for? What is it that you wish for? Because you have that wishing tree inside of you. So we all have come in as co-creators with the infinite creator. And isn't that a lovely thought? It brings in a sense of vitality, a sense of newness. We should always be refreshing ourselves, and God is ever refreshed. Any time that I touch the fabric of God, and I'm touched by the fabric of God, I am refreshed. And sometimes he gives me something, and it's a very well-known truth. I have known it, other people have known it. But when I touch it, and it comes directly from God, it is as if it is brand new issue, sparkling and shining, as if it's never seen the light of day before, a brand new birth. And this is the nature of God consciousness. It is ever new, ever joyful. And so you never tire of it. And I actually had that thought one time. I wonder if I'll ever get tired of God, of his bliss, of his joy, of his presence. And I can tell you, at least to this date and this moment, I never have. Because it has that ever new, ever fresh spirit to it. Everything in this life has a shelf life. Everything has an expiry date. And no matter how much we love getting something when we originally get it, so many things just simply wear off. What we were so excited to get at one time now lies in a closet or in the garage or in a dustbin someplace. And it's not doing anything for us. It doesn't bring us any joy whatsoever. And so it should be passed on. And when we pass things on, then we prepare for new things to be able to come. And not just materially, but as we let go of old ideas, as we let go of old attachments, we allow new creativity to come in, new ideas to come in. There's a principle in Feng Shui, and I believe the number is 29, but you move 29 things in your house, and it opens up new energy, brings new things to you. You can try it and see if it works. And definitely, if you start letting go of those things that no longer are useful to you, no longer bring you joy, that's going to open up new avenues. So if we feel stuck, do something different. Try something different. Notice what the results are. Get that energy moving. Because God's energy is always naturally flowing. When you go to the back of your spine and you think about softening and opening along the spine and allowing that fresh life energy to come in, primarily at the base of the skull, and you listen for that and you feel it, and you'll feel it as I'm feeling it now, as a tingling life force flowing in through the base of the skull. You feel that tingling vibration go throughout your brain and then down through your nervous system. And you hear that wonderful Om sound, that high-pitched sound that comes in. And it's perfect and it's beautiful. And then you place everything that you are at the feet of God. And you say, "Here, my Lord, take me. Do with me as you will." You give yourself there. And then you wait and you listen. And perhaps at first there's only stillness. But you know what? Everything of God is contained in that stillness. You think of a huge body of water that's standing behind a waterfall. And if you're on that lake, it's so smooth and it's so calm and it's so beautiful. And then you go to the waterfall and you hear the tremendous roar and you go down to the base of the waterfall and you feel the power of it pounding away and the roar of the waterfall. And you feel the dynamic energy all around you. All of that was contained in that peaceful, quiet, still lake above. So you start identified with God first, in that stillness, in that peace. And don't worry about it. When God is ready to express himself, he'll think a thought through you. And then he'll project some energy through you. And so you'll start out with a thought. Everything starts out with an idea, with a thought. And then it gets filled with life energy. And then it manifests itself in through your body and in this material world. And this is the way of all creation. But start with God first. Because that way, whatever you create, whatever you think, whatever you direct energy towards, will be for the highest good of everybody concerned. By an automatic virtue, that it comes from God first. And then we get back to the Garden of Eden, the way that God intended creation to go. That we should be united in God consciousness. When Adam and Eve walked in the garden, they communed with God easily, talked with him, he with them. They were at ease. They were in peace. They felt the total, the word's not coming to me, but everything worked in harmony. That's it, harmony. It all came in that way. And your life can be that way too. There's no reason for it not to be. It's who you are. It's how you're designed to be. And so you take God's instruction, and if no instruction is coming, then you reside in that stillness, and you go, well, what if he never moves through me? Well, he never moves through you then. There are some yogis who sit in caves, and they are in the stillness of his being, and they have no desire to be anywhere else. But for most of us, he continues to create. And you look at master's life, you look at mother's life, how vital what they were doing, the number of lives that they influenced, and so on. And God was very busy in their forms. So you surrender those fears to God, whether he makes you busy or not busy, whether he puts you in one situation or another. As the great Trelyanga said about Lari Mahasha, he's like a divine kitten that God has put him in a home and kept him there. He doesn't have any great desire. Lari Mahasha's desire originally would be to stay with Babaji and not return to his home, but he surrendered to his master because he recognized this is the divine will for me. And he may not have understood why. Wouldn't it be better for me to just stay in the cave and to meditate? And he had many, many lifetimes like that. That's what came naturally to him. He was in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. He had attained a great deal already. Wouldn't it be better just to stay here? That's what his heart wanted him to do. But his master said, no, go back out into the world. Be a blessing to this world. Be an example to this world. Help lift this world up. And transform it. And look at the effect that he has had. Because of Lari Mahasha, we had Sri Yukteswarji. Because of Sri Yukteswarji, we have Master. Because of Master, we have Mother. So you see, when God prompts you to do something, guides you and directs you, you don't know, perhaps, all the reasons why he's directing you in a certain way. But when you surrender to him, and you do exactly as he teaches you to do, expresses himself through you, then you will feel that divine harmony inside and out. Now, it doesn't mean that things come easily, or that everybody agrees with you, not at all. Sometimes it's the terrible aspect of God, as Arjuna was experiencing. And you think, God, why did you bring me here? You know, it's like Master when he's telling the story of when he saw hot dogs for sale in America. He said, oh, Lord, you brought me to a country where they eat dogs? Why would you do this? This is a terrible place. And sometimes we have to face those terrible things. But if we will do that and hold in mind, this too is God. This too is God. This too is God. And we may see through the veil of things and recognize the divine nature hiding behind the mask. Beautiful story of the child whose mother was telling him stories. And sometimes the stories were scary, and to help enhance the storytelling, she would wear masks. And one time the child forgot that the mother was behind the mask and the stories being told, absolutely terrified of this being who come in his bedroom wearing this mask. And suddenly he remembers, ah, that's my mother. And he reaches up and he pulls down the mask and he sees his mother smiling behind this terrible mask. And then they laugh and continue to play together. It is one of the great riddles of this life, and it's a thing that disturbs and distresses so many, if not all of us, are the terrible things, the terrible masks that this world can wear. But if you will reach up and pull it down and discover the Divine Mother behind it, then it will solve that dilemma for you. But nothing else can do it. No amount of reasoning, really. It can be helpful to hear, oh, this is all God's play. This is a divine manifestation, but it doesn't really solve the problem for us until we face that terrible aspect, that terrible mask, and pull it down and find the mother. So let us work on this. Think on it. Begin to really put ourselves on this spiritual path with both feet in. Not one foot out and one foot in the world and, you know, kind of hedging our bets. Trust in God. Know that he will take you on this great adventure. Know that when you do pull down that mask, You'll find the smiling Divine Mother there. And then you'll laugh, and maybe you'll even say, let's do it all over again. Where before you had swore you never want to do it, not even once. Pray to God, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence. In every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Bow to the great light within you.